Killer Keller podcast. KillerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's that time again. Killer Keller Podcast, live and direct, Central London on Central, as you need to be. I say it every week. Check it out. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. And, you know, it's the norm now. We're jumping on the Zoom thing for the internationals. It'd be rude not to. And on the other end, man, mate, where to begin? He inspired me immensely growing up, and from mixtapes, Beat Junkies Volume 2, I think was the first, you know, just legacy holding all over the shop. ITF, team champion, visionaries, DJ, producer, collaborator from all walks of East Coast to West Coast hip hop from the 90s to now. DJ Rep Matic in the place. How are we?
Salute, brother. It's been a minute. It's been a hot minute.
It's really hard to combine all of your, I mean, without gushing, which you deserve every right, it's really hard. You've done so much in your career, brother.
Man, thank you. I'm honestly just blessed, just like you. I mean, this culture, you know, hip hop culture, you know, basically it saved my life. Not to sound cliche and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Being a American born Filipino, it helped me to really respect my own culture, where my parents are from the Philippines, and they migrated to the United States in 68 and stuff. So, I mean, it gave me everything that, you know, gave me my knowledge of self, and just and made a shy kid just, you know, be able to express himself, and, you know,
yeah.
And it, this culture brought me, in my wildest dreams, has brought me all over the world and done things that I never think I would never done at all, and able to meet my heroes and actually become friends with them, and or meet, have friends that are, you know, in different parts of the world because of hip hop, and like right now, you know?
Yeah, for real. It's a mad one. We were talking, you know, inevitably, you know, we've not seen each other for ages. So we were going back to go forward prior to this chat. And yeah, man, like these times of when we were crossing paths, they go back in my mind as some very informative years of discovery and just absorbing everything and everyone. And, I mean, let's go there because, you know, this was ITF era. This was Beat Junkies were really coming out of the US into some international territories by the time we'd crossed paths, right?
Yes. Man, that's crazy. Like, obviously, before it aired, we were talking about the, like, kind of like, you brought it up that last time we seen each other, at least from your recollection, it was at the South by Southwest. And I'm like, really? I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. And then, can I cuss?
Yay. It's your podcast, okay. Brother. Go.
What I really remember was, like I said, like the ITF. I don't remember. It was like it was a 2005, 2006. I don't know. It's like the maybe mid late 2000s. I don't know. I could be wrong. I was on the road with the Visionaries, doing a tour, you know, like obviously, and I don't know, was it in Germany or I forgot which country it was, but it was the ITF battle / there was a beatbox championship too as well.
That's right.
So I had a DJ and I had to perform with the Visionaries. I had to judge the ITF, and you were there to perform and host and I think judge the beatbox championship. So
they were getting a lot of bang for their buck back then, right?
I mean, they still do. Promoters try to do. I mean, that's, I think it's bang for the buck and shit. Just try to like, well, if you do this, if you can do this, you can do this. And you know, you had to like, you had to kind of finagle. I mean, especially as being independent, if you weren't like on a major label or anything, you've been, you know, like being independent artists and stuff like that, you had to try to get whatever you can for whatever budget it is and stuff like that. So
for sure, the answer was always yes. I mean, it always, like you say.
But for you, like, you know, it was easy for you. Were just a solo artist. I was with, you know, like me and, you know, Visionaries. There's six of us. So like, you know, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard when you have like six people. And I know that's a big budget for a lot of promoters and stuff, unless you're like someone like, I don't know, Jurassic 5 or, you know, that have a big, real big following and then they're willing to pay the bucks. Sometimes it's kind of hard,
for sure.
You know, stuff. So, but yeah. Yeah.
Those were the eras, brother. That was the eras. Actually, I wasn't going to, but I'm going to actually get into the Visionary thing because the new album came out and, bro, yes. The ICU tune is banging.
Oh, you actually listened?
Yeah, for sure.
You actually got it. Okay. I don't know. You know, like, you know.
I had that was a beat, baby. yeah, it's sick. And furthermore, I mean, first of all, it took me right back to LA, man. I missed that place so much.
Man. Yeah, for a lot of people who don't know, Visionaries, we have a new album called V, appropriately called V. It's our fifth album.
Produced by you, I might add.
Yeah. This is actually the first. Usually, in all our albums, like Kiko and myself are the main producers, and then of course we either have either like J Rock or Babu.
Yeah.
Of course, at the time we had the album before, you know, our fourth album, We Are the Ones. We had, you know, we had Dilla, we had Madlib, we had Kev Brown.
Crazy.
Before that, you know, we had Ono. Can Kick. I mean, you know, we had, you know, all the homies and stuff, but majority of the production was held down by Key and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, after the fourth album, obviously, there was like a 13, 14 span for the next album. And a lot of it was like, you know, I only can speak for myself and stuff. So, and technically I was kind of like burnt out, you know, and, you know, being in a group, it's very hard, you know, you know, it's like a marriage basically and stuff. So, and for me personally, I needed to venture out and grow as a person and as a DJ and as a producer and stuff like that. So, the group never broke up. We always did shows, but we never recorded. So, you know, like when we perform, it's like, you know, it's like drinking water. It's like boom, 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 boom.
Back on the bike. Yeah.
Right, on the bike. But to record was a whole, you know, everybody was in a different space. Everybody, you know, and, you know, we as any group or any family or like that, you know, we had disagreements or whatever, whatnot, but the love was always still there. But it was just not, you know, like again, only can speak for myself. I had to learn how to, you know, like, you know, just to grow and to, you know, like to take a break and just to learn and get experience and stuff. Because you know, our fans would always want the next album, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the guys said, we got to make a new album. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I was not mentally prepared for that, you know? So when we came back, you know, when it was time to make the album, I think, you know, by the time, you know, I felt confident enough by the time, like, you know, like I was able to, I had a couple of projects under my belt. I did things on my own. Because a lot of people don't know me as a producer. They don't know me as, you know, as a DJ, a turntablist or whatever, whatnot. Yeah. So
the whole beat junkies, dynasty. Right. Yeah.
So I kind of like, you know, it just, you know, and being, you know, being a DJ, it was the next progression as being a producer. If you came from that era, it's like, you know, basically the world's greatest hip hop producers were DJs. So that's the next evolution and stuff. But, you know, I've always been making beats, but I've never, you know, never really outside of the Visionaries or whatever circle I, you know, rolled with and stuff like that. So I wanted to start venturing out. So when I felt confident of what I do, and usually because, like, you know, the DJs, you know, we don't really, you know, we speak with our hands. I don't, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, you're an MC, so, you know, you guys have to be like this. I and And I have, you know, you have five MCs and one DJ, and you have six personalities, you're going to clash heads. And, you know, so it's, and that's a, it was a thing, like sometimes it's kind of hard to do. And there's certain things I can't do within the Visionaries that I wanted to do outside of that, you know, like musically wise too, as well, you know, professionally and musically and stuff. So when I came, so when it was like, when I finally decided to say, you know, like, let's do a Visionaries album. But I said, you know, because like the guys were like, yo, you and Key should do this. He's like, Brett, you should make a Visionaries beat. And I was like, I don't even know what a Visionaries beat is.
Oh, that's like the hardest thing to even suggest, I bet, you know.
How? Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, like as an artist, you should know this too as well, is that you have to, I realized learning that you have to make things from your heart. You know, like it has to make sense, right? And I learned a lot also, you know, again, as a person, as a man and stuff like that. I learned stuff that, you know, you have to be true to yourself. Mm. Also, when you got to learn how to, like, when you're in a relationship, you have, it's a give and take, but that has, but you have to learn how to communicate. And you have to also become, you know, confident and they take, I didn't, you know, as artists, you're very sensitive with your own work. So it's you know, when someone criticizes your shit, you're just like, you take it to heart, you know?
For sure. So,
but I had to learn as like, you can't, I, over the years and stuff, during those years from fourth album came out in 2006. Mm. From 2006 to, you know, to up to now, like, I learned a lot in terms of like, you realize you can't please everybody.
The hardest lesson to learn, man.
It is the hardest lesson to learn. You can't please everybody. All you can do is do your best. Even if it's not, it's like, as long as you tried your best, you can't be afraid of failing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like right. What I've learned is that if you're afraid to fail, then you're afraid to succeed.
Ooh, yo, fact. Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly.
So, and then what also, like, during the process, I've if you met, you know, like back then, you know, I was pretty heavy set. I was kind of fat, you know, like that. So then during that, those times, I started learning. I started late, but I started training jiu-jitsu.
Ooh,
Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Okay. So what I've learned from that is like, that helped another level in terms of like showing me like, your ego is not your amigo. Cause like when you go train and stuff, like you could be, oh sure, you're the baddest, whatever this.
Yeah, yeah.
When you go and train in the mats, that doesn't matter. So you can get touched, you can get choked out. Mm-hmm. And that made me realize like, okay, that add another layer, like, okay, you know, don't think you're the shit. Cause there's someone out there. You might be better than someone, but there's someone out there is better than you, and you get choked out.
Yeah.
Real quick. So that kind of helped me in terms of applying that to my lesson of learning, you know, applying to everyday life and to my music and stuff. So once I get that mindset in terms of this, like, you're always a student. That's it, you know, and you're just going to learn. Yeah. Your biggest competition is yourself. I mean, everything I say is a very cliche. You hear this all the time.
Yeah.
But it's so true when you go through life and stuff, and life will, you know, like karma will smack you one way or another.
Yeah.
Like for real. You know, like, yeah, when we were young, you think you're the shit. And then when you get older, you're like, you really ain't the shit.
Yeah. It's funny actually, because you learn more as you get older. It's almost like you want to roll reverse your head. You know, so that you're younger with a wiser head. It's a weird science. And you know what? The things you talk about there, though, is a hip hop mentality. It's knowledge of self. That's really what we're getting at, isn't it?
Totally. So going back to the Visionaries thing. So when I said, look, guys, we're gonna make the album, but I'm gonna do all the beats.
Yeah.
And there's if you listen to the album, there's a skit on there I got from Jazzy Jeff, you know, cause he preached this to us, you know, to a lot of us and stuff, saying like, hey man, die empty. Basically you're saying like, don't hold on to shit, let it go. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Just put it right. So I took that same attitude in making this album, and saying, like, guys, here's the beats. I don't know what a visionary's beat is.
Mm.
These are my beats. Even if you don't feel it, write to it. Don't overthink it. Don't overthink it. Just do it, right? Because before, everybody's like, yo, we need to do this. We need to do that. It's like, nah, dude. If you keep on doing that, we're never going to. Just write. Just whatever comes out, comes out.
Mm.
You know? And basically, that's how the album was. Like I said, and I just like, you know, and I learned to also before, you know, trying to overproduce or like, you know, like, hey, you got to do your verses, this and this. I said, you know what, guys, I'll let you write. Just write your whatever. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you how to write. Don't tell me how to make my beats.
Yeah.
Right. Because before they would always tell you, hey, Rhett, you need to do this and this. And it's like, you know, and again, as artists, we're sensitive to shit. So I kind of like, I got to a point where just like, guys, look, I'm not going to tell you how to write. You be your own critic and stuff. Yeah. If it sounds dope to me, cool. If you're happy with it, cool. Give me those and I'll rearrange it the way it's supposed to be, you know, like that. So, and it took us 3 years over the off and on, you know, because like the guys, at one point I would say like, if they wanted to record, it's like, guys, go record. Don't wait for me. Because they were always waiting for me. Like for whatever reason, they're waiting for me. And Key's is the one making beats and stuff too. It's like, record with Key.
Yeah.
Go with Key, you know, like, but, you know, like, but then it got to a point where just like, because they're, you know, like, during those times, again, you know, I was making moves, making real, you know, building relationships and stuff. And I'm very lucky to, you know, again, it's just, and getting experiences. So I was bringing that to the table and stuff like, guys,
as in like other collaborations and artistic moves.
That and just business, like, you know, being in an industry.
Yeah,
know,
for sure.
You know, being independent and stuff. Not necessarily being in the quote, mate, you know, the big major, you know, like I stay away from that shit, you know, like, but you have to learn it just to know what it is.
Just
to know
the like, foundations of it.
One, people got to understand there's the culture, there's the music, and there's the music business.
For real.
Business of making music. So you have to, you know, and let's be real, it's making money in the music business, unless you're on some, a certain tier, it's rough. You got it. Like, you
working
have to
multitask.
Yeah, yeah. Working class. So, and you have to be realistic about shit.
Mm.
That's one thing about, like, especially now with social media, you see what's, you know, what's presented to you, but they don't see what's behind the scenes and shit like that.
Totally.
And it made me realize, like, you know what? You just got to be authentic to who, I mean, again, not to sound cliche. You got to be authentic and be true to yourself. And like, once you have that realistic, it's like, you know what? Those other, you know, like, of course, having videos, this and this and this and that, you know, like, that's just, you know, that's just imaging. You just have to, and you realize when you pinpoint what you really like to do and find your crowd or lane, you stick to that. And then everything else is just icing on the cake. And I've learned too, also, like, you know, sometimes, you know, the lifestyle we were at young, I want to live my life, you know, just purely on my art. And the way how the industry is set up, you know, it's not sometimes, you know, only very few can do that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you still can do it, but you sometimes when reality sets in, there's no shame in getting a daytime job or whatever, or have, you know, if you're going to do
some balance somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you're going to have, if you're going to be in your whatever profession or for something like us, you have to multitask. You have to have like at least five other things to get the stream. Like you're doing podcasting, you're doing, you know, like, you have to.
That's right.
You know, and that's the reality. And the craziest thing back then too, as well, to compare now, social media. I mean, there was social media, but it was kind of like, it was just starting, right? You know, but now it's like, even before then, it's like, if you wanted to be a recording artist, you had to really invest money. Like, it cost a lot of money going to the studio and shit. Now it's like, now look, technology, we're doing this. You can make beats on your laptop versus like you can DJ on a controller, like, you know,
all of
digital
that.
And stuff, all of that. It's a little bit more cheaper versus like us, it was expensive hobby, expensive passion and stuff like that. Like you spend a lot of money and shit like that. Yeah. But that means that you were serious about it. Now, the thing is that, you know, I can't really knock them because I understand, but, you know, but everybody wants to be in the limelight.
Yeah. Yeah. By hook or by crook.
Yeah. I mean, either way, you know, and I can't, you know, before I was like, oh, fuck that shit. You know, like, again, it as time goes on, you'll see who's really serious and who has the talent.
That's what's going to happen.
Always going to happen. Always. It may take a while.
Yeah.
But it always, you can tell who sticks with it. And, you know, as the saying goes, the cream of the crop rises and stuff like that.
For real.
You know, and it takes a lot. And what people don't understand, it takes a long time. Like to even be some type of establishment, yeah. Right? 10 years, at least 10 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? And then even when we get that there, you still got like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like sperm to the egg, man. It's impossible. You don't even know how long the piece of string is on your legacy. You just got to keep going. And it's almost like it's seasonal. You know, everyone has their time in the sun, but then it's how you manage the downtime.
Yeah,
that's the
you know, like I said, it's like everyone. You just hit a point. Everybody has their chance, one way or another. You know, one time or another. It's all about how you. When you have that moment, what are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
Sometimes when you do have it, sometimes it's not meant to you to have it because you didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like again, it's everyone's journey is different. I've been really, really learning that. You know. Growing up, even at my age, like I said, the accolades you gave me is such a blessing that you gave me. But I still look at it myself as like I'm really a student. It's almost like I feel like I'm just I'm really starting now. If that makes any sense?
That makes complete sense, bro.
You know how this saying is: as you turn 40, that's when life really begins.
Yeah, and mentally, and just you've built all the armor on your body, and you've gained in strength and less fucks to give. You kind of just apply and attack things differently, don't you?
Totally.
It's the best shit. Just a slight juncture in my thinking, because you mentioned about visionaries and the kind of dance that you guys as a collective have to do, and the multitask that DJ Rep Matic delegates himself to. I'm just thinking, like, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but obviously there is a Visionaries, which has a collective, a very strong collective vibe. Beat Junkies, without a doubt, you know, a fucking flame to this. Do you like the collaborative aspect? Is there something about that intensity that you like?
Well, being in two groups and in a couple of other collectives and whatnot per se, but you know, obviously Beat Junkies and Visionaries are my foundation stuff. So a lot of people don't know Beat Junkies. We're still going strong.
Oh yeah. Beat Junkie TV.
Yeah, Beat Junkie TV, that's our online school. We have our beatjunkies.com,
amazing,
which is pretty much everything Beat Junkies. And then we also have a brick and mortar. Right, yeah. We have our own DJ school,
yeah.
The Beat Junkie Institute of Sound here in Southern California.
So sick.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's funny when you're being around like-minded people, And being people, that's like, you hear the saying that you want to be around like-minded people that same is as good as you or better than you. That's so true. Because that pushes you to be better. Because like the irony is this, like I'm one of the oldest guys in the crew, in the Junkies, right? You know, and the rest of the guys like Baz, Mello, Jay, they're a little bit younger than me and stuff like that. But like Short and D.
You got crazy levels of, about cutting you too short. Yo, the crew. Oh my God.
I mean, I've been crazy levels. You know, I'm older. Like I'm probably one of the oldest and been doing a little bit longer and stuff, but these guys are fucking incredible and stuff. And just, they keep pushing me. Cause I would like, that was another thing too, that humbled me, is even though I've been done longer a little bit than them.
Mm.
these guys were better than me. Straight up. And then my ego was like, oh. So it made me force, like, I don't want to be the weak link. You know, the saying goes, you don't want to be the weak link. So you always work harder. I still to this day have to work 10 times harder just because some of them, you know, some of the guys are just so natural and shit like that.
There's,
you know,
sophistication in your style. You were versatile, and there was a sophistication about your thing, man.
That means a lot. Thank you, man. Like I said, man, I'm a student. Like, you know, like again, from the era we come from, you know, like, you had to come up with your own style. You can't bite.
No.
You know? I mean, that the values of bite, you know, like the values that we grew up is totally different now. It's a different generation and stuff like that. And in some ways, I can't blame them. I can't, you know, because it's in some ways it's our fault.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, why I say that is because people complain, like, oh man, there's not so many dope hip hop. There ain't like this and that. There's not the great music, right?
Yeah.
And when you get older, you realize, man, the people before us were saying the same thing about our shit. Our parents were saying the same thing. And now we're becoming, being like our parents, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people that said the same thing too, that are from our generation, let's be realistic. A lot of them have got married, have kids, responsibilities.
Yeah.
And by that time, they left, you know, whatever they left, you know, they loved, they left that behind.
Yeah, at least 8 years, 8 years ago, they leave it
right
behind.
You know, like, you know, granted, that's a majority, but a lot of people that still have families and stuff, they still keep going. Like, you never stop. If you really love this culture, you never stop.
You never stop.
You never,
man,
participate, right? I mean, okay, perfect example is Jazzy Jeff.
Oh my God, yeah.
I always bring this up in a lot of interviews and stuff, where, like,
so,
you know,
sick.
Jeff, because Jeff was like, you know, when Serato came out, when everybody, you know, I was one of them. I was like, fuck that shit. Keep it real. Whatever. Yeah. And Jeff was like, yeah, man, hey, check this out.
I'm gonna do it. Yeah.
When someone that helped popularize Transform Scratch and does it.
Yeah.
And telling you, like, you know, the possibilities. It's like, he's an OG. You're gonna tell that to him? And he still can bust your ass.
Yeah.
You know, sure, he might not be able to do all the crazy new technical shit, but he still can bust your ass.
Yeah.
Better, you know, like, that's what I'm saying. Can you do that? I mean, that made me. And the thing is that he kept on going. He never stopped.
Yeah.
Granted, you know, well, everybody can say, well, shoot, he got that Fresh Prince of Bel Air money and shit. Like, even what then, you know, he still had, you know, you never stop, because even if you get to that point, what happens?
Yeah.
Like, it's like saying, like, okay, you won a DMC World Championship. That's great. But how long is those accolades? You can't. For that 1 year, for us being, you know, 1997, 98 ITF team world champions, being a 1996 DMC West Coast champion.
Yeah.
That was great then.
That's right.
They said, yeah, that's great. But what are you doing now?
That's right. And a lot of people do hang. And I think that goes back to hanging around with good people that push you, because some people, they have those acclaims and, you know, they work so hard to get to reach that goal. Sometimes there's that, and I've said it before in the podcast, there's like a level of PTSD where you come off the ride of something that you've worked really, really hard for, by hook or by crook, and you've lost money. You've done the 10,000 hours plus, and you've alienated yourself from most of your family and friends, and then you've done it. And then what? It's like coming off tour and trying to declimatize it, but for more.
That's what I'm saying. It fucks with your head. It fucks with your head. Like, in terms of, like, you have to realize, why do you do this?
Yeah.
And it comes back down to, what do you love? What you do?
Yeah.
Once you get that thinking of, like, what made you do this in the first place? Because, I mean, everybody that's in our passion, our career, have one or twice in their lifetime a thought of quitting. I can remember that almost that one time that I almost quit.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Yeah.
There was a point, there was a transition from when things were going digital, like, you know, with Serato and social media and shit like that. And some people were getting more gigs than I was, or whatever, you know, like that. And shit was, you know, wasn't popular, quote unquote popular at the time. You know,
what
like,
was
whatever.
That though? What was that? What was that? Was that an ego or was that something more?
A lot of it was ego. A lot of, yeah, definitely ego. Pride.
I feel you.
Ego. You know, because you like you said, you just said you used to having certain things, and then things change. And it took me a while to realize, like, you know, I have to learn how to adopt, you know? Yeah. And again, it goes back to even saying with Jeff. Jeff says you have to, you know, like, adopt, but stick in your lane. You don't have to chase the trends.
Mm.
That's the thing. That was a hard lesson to learn.
That's right.
And, right?
Yeah.
And, like, if people are saying, like, they're like even those that are, like, they used to be, the man back then, and they're trying to come back in, and they don't realize it's, like, things have changed. You know, right? And what I also learned is, like, you have to a lot of this stuff, when the transition and stuff, I learned a lot also from the younger generation. And I learned, like, even learning how to, like, to go out there, you know, like, you know how it is. It's like back then, it's like you have a manager or whatever, and they do the talking. You know, like, kind of like there's a thing. Now that's out the window now.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta, like, you really need, you know, especially if you want to be independent, you have to learn how to engage with the people, with your fans or whatever, whatnot and stuff. It's weird to hear say fans to me, because I still think of myself.
Because you're a fan. Engine. Yeah.
I'm still a fan and stuff like that. But I do say hip hop is the only, I could be wrong, but for my, you know, hip hop is the only genre that fans, I have to say, are the most finickiest, almost entitlement. You know,
dangerous,
like,
levels of Lord of the Flies in any venue back then.
Yeah.
like room.
Like on the real, like, you know, like, it, you know, like, it's one thing, because I think, again, being a fan on one side, and then when you become and then you cross over, then you start to, you know, you realize that, you know, that there's a difference. Like, it's just the same, but it's a difference, right?
Yeah.
But then you realize, you don't want to be an asshole. Like, sometimes you become an asshole because the person that's, like, being an asshole. Like, you know, like, I had, you know, like, I still, to this day, I'm really appreciative, but I'm not used to when people say, "Oh man, you changed my life," or this and this and that. Because it's like, I'm still trying to figure out shit myself.
Yeah,
right? I'm still a fan. I still love this. And I still believe in terms of, like, you treat people how you want to be treated.
Yeah, right? For real. 1,000%.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that also comes also from, I don't know, from your upbringing, whatever, whatnot. But yeah. I think when someone, you know, when, like, again, hip hop is like working at Bat Beats, used to have people come in, "Yo, man, what you know about that shit?" And they try
if
to.
If you're listening to this and watching this, get to the visual.
Yo, so yeah, I'm acting like on some b-boy, on some, like, hardcore shit. Like, dude, like you know, like,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Yo, son, or yo, G, you know, what's up? What you know about this shit, man? That shit's played out.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
You know, it's like, "Is this shit dope? I heard it's whack." And I was like, "Okay, have you listened to that? Let me, you know, like, you're gonna listen to someone? You're not listening for yourself? You know, like, and usually when people come and give me attitudes like that, like, that's the thing. That's like, I usually try, you know, I was young too, also, so I kind of like may done some things. So it's like, but as I got older, I realized, you know, if people, you know, came on with respect, that's okay, thank you. But if they come with an asshole, I'll throw back that asshole. And then they get offended and saying, like, "Rip Maddox an asshole."
And then all of a sudden you're in that cycle. You're all of a sudden under that.
Yeah. And for me, I don't like, you know, like, I try to treat people with respect and stuff, but I don't like it when people call me an asshole, because I don't like to be, you know, I don't want to be an asshole. I really don't. But, you know, but
I can't imagine you being an asshole, bro.
But it's, you'd be surprised some people said that. I man. It's even weird. Like, now, this is, you know, even for how many years, dude, everybody mistaken me for Babu.
What?
Yeah, dude. Because, you know, it's like,
what?
We're both Filipino.
Okay.
We're both in the same crew. We both DJ. Babs has a, you know, like, a easy remember name. I have a look that's pretty, you know, we don't look, you know, it's like the same thing, like all white people the same, all black people look the same and shit like that. All Asian people look the same, but you can't tell the difference between like what's Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Filipino, Samoans, you know.
Who, give me the basic demographic of a person that wouldn't know the difference between you and Babs.
It varies.
We're in stereotype mode. I'm like, yeah, what the fuck?
Because people come up to me. Yo, Babu, I love the shit you do and stuff like that.
Oh, my God.
To this day, even when I lost weight, too, I don't wear hats. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I don't wear baseball hats.
Yeah.
All right?
For starters.
Right. That's one thing. Babs can't grow facial hair, but the sexiest part now, he wears glasses now. So I'm bald headed. He wears, you know, caps all the time, or he has hair. Some, you know, like, so I'm bald headed and stuff. At one point, you know, I had a big goatee and shit. I shaved.
Yo, you know what you used to do as well? We used to fucking kick ass. You know, people would always say, oh, there's the Killer Keller stance when beatboxing. You know, the kind of stance I did. You had a signature move that was like the glasses, like, come on out. Yo, see you now. That's what it looked like. Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they get us mixed up. They see that they all know the face, but they know the name more better, whatever. It's funny.
You both worked at Fat Beats too, didn't you? You both.
Yeah, we both. Yeah, Baz was one of the first general managers for Fat Beats LA.
Damn, that's cold, bro.
Yeah, so and then basically like Jay Rock, you know, shouts, yeah. And then my man Silos, who works with us at the school, Marsky, I joined up. Newmark was working at there at one point. Mark Love, you know, like for LA, you know, like Fat Beats New York was the, you know, like the place to go to when you go to New York, and you know, like Fat Beats LA was the spot that everyone, if you come to LA, you got to go to.
I can't even remember how many times I went to Fat Beats. It becomes a blur. And
man, it's
you gotta know, bro.
Yeah. So, but yeah, everybody, you know, some spirit. It's weird. It's a joke. So, but I remember like one time. This is some crazy. So this is in '98, DMC USA. This is the one that Craze won. Craze won the USA to go to become. This is the road to becoming his first championship. Lord okay. Finesse was the. Lord Finesse was the host. Short won second place. He came out of retirement and won.
Nice.
Second place. Craze won. Third. Dummy was third. We did teams, and we were coordinating. I forgot with who, but Tony. You know, I think also with Tony Prince.
Hold tight,
Tony. You know how Tony messes up everybody's names and all that shit.
Yeah.
Excuse me. No disrespect to my UK peeps, but you know. So this is in New York, and we finally, you know, us coming up like, yo, that's Tony Prince. You know, we got the videotapes. We're like, we're fucking, you know, we're gonna be performing. It's one thing battling, and now we're performing and shit.
It's really happening with Tony Prince in the room.
And it was the first time we're gonna see Tony Prince, because none of us obviously made it to the world and shit. I mean, we could have done teams, but by that time, you know, after we won the ITF, you know, like, you know,
yeah.
We didn't do we didn't do teams and shit like that. We everybody, you know, like Baz was dialing, Jay's doing, you know, doing Friday Night Flavors and Stone's Throw, me with Visionaries, Mello spinning on the radio, and then eventually going doing, like, you know, doing Vegas and shit.
You were doing
like
your things. So, yeah.
I mean, we're still a crew, but you know, individually we're also like doing a lot of shit, you know. Like, and then D and Short were, you know, also part of the Pickles and shit like that. So
that's right.
We saw Tony. We're like, oh shit, there's Tony. And I want to say I was the one coordinating. I did, and Tommy Gunn was also a beat junkie.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's 13 of us.
That's right.
A lot of people don't know that. Tommy was also our manager. So between Tommy and myself, we were coordinating with DMC and also with Tony through emails or whatever, whatnot. AOL.
Okay.
Whatever.
Yeah. That old school dial-up shit.
Old school dial-up. So so we finally, you know, corresponding with him through AOL. And then finally, like, you know, we get to, oh, you, there's Tony, right? Baz was the first one to come, like, was really good, like, yo, Tony, man, it's great to finally meet. I kid you not. Oh, says this to Beth. Oh, Rhythmatic, it's great to finally meet you. And I'm right there. All of us are right there like, what the fuck? And Baz being a joker, I'll just call me Rhett.
That's hilarious.
Right? So sometimes I used to, like, I'm not going to lie. I get perturbed sometimes when people call, like, I'm not Babs. Some people are like, you're lying. You're Babu. I was like, I'm not Babu. There are times I would go like, hey, Babu. Like, what's up, man? Just call me Chris because his real name is Chris. Yo, man. So, man. Yeah, man. New Dilate. Luckily, I knew everything that was going on with Dilate. It's like, yeah, new Dilate album's coming out. Oh, Duck Season 3 is about to, you know.
Yeah, that's a toughie. That's a toughie.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I think I went off topic now.
No. I'm still with you. I'm still with you. Do you feel like with that many people, I mean, actually run through the names again on the Beat Junkies. Let's go through this properly so that people
are completely clear. So Beat Junkies was formed in 1992, founded by J-Rock.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get that straight. That's why we call him the Funky J-Rock. President. Right? The original members are Jay, DJ Curse.
Two.
Mello, myself.
Three. Four.
Yeah, so those are the original members. And then originally then Icy Ice. Symphony, who's Icy Ice's sister. So it was we had a female member.
Right.
Right. Okay. And then Shortcut, D Styles. Yep. A lot of people don't know that Short and D were Junkies before they were Pickles.
Didn't members. Know that.
Yeah. They became Junkies. They were Junkies before become Pickle members. Then Tommy Gunn.
Tommy Gunn, yeah.
DJ What.
There you go.
And then the two last members to join was Babs, Babu, and Mr. Chalk. And then a lot of, here's a little tidbit, you know, because some people heard about it and we talk about it once in a while. Yeah. At one point, we had a DJ Rectangle or Hot Minute.
Remember. Now, there was something about that. It would actually have been weird if he hadn't, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, he was for Hot Minute. And then we had another cat named Sweet Pea and stuff
that's
like that.
But,
right, but the members I've mentioned, you know, there's 13 of us and stuff. So yeah, that's a good being around people and stuff. So with the Junkies and stuff, you know, being around people, that's good. It pushes you like that. So
yeah,
and knock on wood, you know, I think, you know, like we've been, you know, the Junkies have been, you know, we're very lucky that we're considered part of the top three crews of turntablism, I guess.
Yeah,
in the
real
history of turntables, right? So,
yeah.
But to me, is like our biggest accomplishments is that we're still a crew.
A crew.
We're still friends.
That's right.
Right. Compared to the Pickles and the X-Men or Executioners.
Yeah.
Right, you know.
All the perverts suffered in different ways in not being able to stay.
Right. So, yeah. But I mean, like any crews, we had our own internal beefs. I wouldn't say beefs, but like internal conflicts and whatever, whatnot.
Yeah.
But for the most part, in some ways, and this is from my collection, my memories, you know, so I'm sure some of the guys might have different sizes, but for me,
yeah.
I've always looked like, you know, out of the top three, that everybody would always go to the Pickles or the Executioners, right? I'm going to come for the three crews. And we're like, you know, like whatever, for the third. And it's kind of interesting because the Pickles were straight scratch and the Executioners were straight beat jugglers.
That's right.
And we were in between.
Do you think that saved the situation that allowed you guys to flourish? You know, that it was almost like you were... The pressure wasn't on you to be East Coast, West Coast Kings or whatever, because there's always been a reliability. Like you say, you guys are all so well-rounded. There's a strong reliability in that.
Well, there was a couple of things I like to think, you know, in my humble personal opinion is that, okay, one is that we weren't as popular. So like it used to kind of fuck with us in our heads. Like, ooh. How come we're, you're like, oh, yeah, I mean, considering like certain things that we've done, we worked hard, but we get glossed over.
Do you think that was a DMC thing?
I don't know.
That you weren't.
I don't know. It's just certain things. It's just certain things that we always kind of like. You're like, why? You know. And at the same time, it's like, you know, hey, everyone's gonna pick their favorites, whatever. It's like the same thing. At one point, like, you know, I'm probably, even to this day, I probably might be the least favorite junkie, right? You know, at one point, everybody used to,
bollocks.
You know,
he says in his thicky English accent.
You know. At one point, everybody used to say, you know, like, especially when the height of turntablism, everybody looked at Jay like, he can't really, you know, like, he's not, you know, like, he's not doing like all the crazy juggles and scratches and shit, you know. But what people don't understand with Jay is that, you know, like, when we did our tune routines, he put the funk into, you know, like, he helped us, like, yo, we should do this, that, you know, like, like, he, you know, he was that. He was the funk that gave us the funk and shit like that. Yeah. Our style of mixing is because of Jay. When we say Beat Junkie style of mixing, that's because of Jay. You know, he's James Brown on turntables.
Man.
Like this guy is, he can take any record. You give him any record,
yeah,
can fuck it without even being marked. Never heard it before and can fuck that shit up, mix it the way he wants it. I mean, he might not be on some technical, like doing the, you know, doing like whatever, you know, eighth note quarter beat juggles or, hydroplaning to boomerang scratches and shit like that, but I mean, we came up with the turn trip mixing, but it's really, we call it just DJing. But it's just, you know, when
yeah,
people started putting labels on names on certain techniques and stuff,
yeah.
So we kind of like, fuck it, let's get our mark. Let's get, you know, like that trick mixing, Beat Junkie style trick mixing.
I felt like you guys were like, I mean, this is purely from my positioning geographically and in the depths of the culture. Here's the best way to describe it. You guys were an organization, and the feel that you guys came as a crew on, like you say, it was like 13 plus. You rolled like, you know, like you get those graffiti crews, you know,
right.
You know, the crew mentality. It felt like you can't fuck with the Beat Junkies. Do you mean, because there's just too many of them?
Well, it helped us a lot. It's like a lot of us were, you know, became really friends because of teaching hip hop and shit. Like, you know, like for me, like Curse, I mentioned Curse. Curse,
yeah,
is like,
he's your mentor,
oldest,
right?
Yeah, he's the oldest, and I'm the second oldest.
Yeah.
And then it'll be between me and well, yeah, it'll be Curse, myself. What's like kind of the same age as me? Chalk's a year after me and stuff like that. You know, so Curse, I've said this in many interviews and stuff. So Curse is, I went to high school with him and stuff.
That's crazy.
And he's half Filipino, half white.
Right.
So, in many sense, he was my Q-Bert before Q-Bert came into play. Because during those times in the 80s and stuff like that, again, you got to remember, hip-hop is a predominantly black and Latino culture scene. You know, there's just in terms of what was going on and stuff. And especially in L.A., or in Southern California and L.A., a lot of Asians, especially Filipinos, were very active in the hip-hop culture. I mean, you know, if anyone that came up, you did at least 2 to 3 out of the 4 elements, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Asians were not very outspoken, you know, but so there weren't really many Asian MCs, but there were a lot of DJs. There were a lot of B-boy poppers, dancers, a lot of graph artists and stuff.
Oh, my God.
Right. So, I mean, I did 3 of those and stuff. So, and then, you know, so, because I can't rap for shit. I can't even rap Guess Good either. So, there you go.
Oh, listen, you make up on so many other levels, brother. Yeah.
But what I was trying to say, so Kurt, like, you know, like, Curtis was like, again, I learned a lot just watching him, because he was the fact that he was respected within the book with the black and Latino communities. Because at the time, it's like, it's, I hate to say it, on some 8 Mile shit, you had to, you know,
go for yours.
You had to really get that respect.
Mm.
And really do. I mean, sure, you deal with some of the stereotypes, like, hey, what's this, what's this Chinese guy? I'm not even Chinese, but what's this Chinese guy trying to do and shit? Once you show them proof, they're like, ah, shit, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a duality in it, stuff like that, you know. Even to like, even within the Filipino, you know, like the Asian community, Filipino community, like, you know, like again, Asians in the West Coast have been involved in the hip hop culture for such a long time since the 80s.
Yeah.
But it was also a bubble, like the, you know, like during those times, it was segregated in some ways, you know, like it's just like Asians would hang out, even though they're hip hop, but you know, there was also a glass level, a glass ceiling, and shit.
Yeah.
And for me, I was like, and Curse was able to break all of that shit and stuff like that, get that respect. Because he was, cool. You know, he got that respect and shit. Not that, I was like, yo, he was a, you know, it's one thing hearing mixes on the radio. It's one thing hearing scratches or whatever on records and shit. But, and I've seen other DJs like, but he, for me personally, was to see someone that had my skin color, background, whatever, and to see him cut, he was the first person to actually seem like cutting it up.
That must have changed your whole life, bro.
Oh, fuck yeah. Fuck my head up.
Yeah.
I mean, I was, you know, before he was DJing, I was popping and doing graph, but just to see him do, like, seeing him.
Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That kind of like, get the respect he was doing and shit, like, you know, just like, he was the, you know, like, besides, you know, all the heroes we all grew up listening to, him, another cat named Arabian Night, two black brothers, two African Americans, Arabian Night, who's now he was a KD mix master at one point. He became an MC now. He goes by the name of Psycho, or part of a group called Insane Poetry. So they were kind of like the almost the forefathers of horrorcore rap, right? So
really, what?
Yeah, Insane Poetry. So they were.
Hold
they were
on, I know these guys. I know them.
They rolled with, you know, like with Rodney O and Joe Cooley.
I remember now. Yeah, that they were proper hardcore.
They were before Gravediggers.
Yeah, that's right. I remember them very well. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So he became, from a DJ, became an MC. And then another person now, which kind of like I kind of got my name from, is the name of Scratchmatic.
Gotcha.
So he was a local legend, but he was one of the, like, but he was also like an LA, he was a local legend where I grew up, at a place called Cerritos, which is like a suburbia, 30 minutes away from LA, but in LA County and stuff.
Okay.
So, but he was kind of like one of the first, I want to say there the DJ battles. It was, Radiotron.
Yeah, of course.
So Radio,
that's the breakdancers, right?
Yeah, so that's like where the movie Breaking kind of based upon that miracles and shit like that.
Uh-huh.
So Radiotron he entered a battle over there and won the first DJ battle. So he changed his name his original name was Anthony, and he changed his name from Scratchmatic. They named him Antron and stuff like that. So how I got the name Repmatic, Curse used to kind of like, he wasn't going by Curse at the time, but. The Curse used to go like yo, Repmatic. I was like, my old DJ name was Fix, PHIX. That was my graffiti name. But I was like, might as well call myself DJ Fix.
Okay, right? Okay.
And then he goes, you know, he used to go, yo, Repmatic. I said, don't call me that, dude. I don't want Scratchmatic to think I'm biting and, you know, whatever like that. But it just kind of stick. Because at the same time, too, Repmatic, I was like, what is a Repmatic? Sounds like a refrigerator name and shit like that. It was, you know. So
that's how the name came about.
That's how the name came about. That's because
he's fucking wondered.
So Rhett, okay, so this is when you get into, this is where all the Filipino
right.
thing came out. So my parents, you know, if you know, a lot of Filipinos are Catholics. So
right.
My birth name is Nazareth, like Jesus of Nazareth. So then, you know, so then I think Rhett. So they named me. So Rhett is my other real name or nickname, whatever we want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Rhett, spelled R-H-E-T-T, right?
Yeah.
They got that name from Rhett Butler, the character from Gone with the Wind, because that's their favorite movie, right? So here's the Filipino logic. If you got, you know, so... I used to hate my name when I was growing up, because everybody would fuck up my name all the time and shit, or like, what the hell is this? You know, like, you know... No, now I'm happy that, you know, I got original name, but back then, you know, kids were like, they were,
oh, ruthless, man.
Ruthless, man. They used to
lazy and ruthless.
Man.
Oh, my God.
I fucked my name up so much. I used to get traumatized about that shit.
Oh, mate. Like, trust me. I feel you. Kids are horrible.
So, man. They don't know what Nazareth is. And then when they said Rhett, they were like, Rich, Rhett. Oh, like, fuck. You know? So, anyways, I remember asking myself, so why did you name me Nazareth? Well, Rhett, because, you know, we pray to God, if you, Lord, if you give us a baby boy, we will name you after your birthplace, Jesus and that. I was like, so he gave us a boy. So I was like, okay. So, well, how'd you get Rhett? Well, our favorite movie was God Went to Win.
Oh, my God.
So Rhett Butler. But, Mom, Dad, like, Rhett, it doesn't spell the right way. You know, Nazareth. Yeah. It's like, but it rhymes. Nazareth, Rhett.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
It works, you know.
If people want to understand how Filipino cultures and all that stuff, watch comedian Joe Coy on Netflix.
Joe Coy.
Yeah. He talks about it. Filipino, man, every Filipino moms, Filipinos can tell you that's how Filipino moms are. That's the logic and all that shit, you know.
Do you think, like, DJing, because... You're tremendously up to speed. Did DJing help you do that? Because that's a sport where you've got to be just up on your tracks. You've got to be up on your game.
Yeah, of course. You're walking this encyclopedia. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I can't do half of the newer techniques. That's, some of these kids are incredible and shit like that. I mean, even the new cats.
Yeah, they're crazy.
Just like, you know, it's like the same thing with b-boying. You know how, like...
Oh, my God.
Dude.
Yeah, I know.
Incredibly. So, but the thing is that it goes back to, like, everybody has their time, you know, you just got to do you.
Yeah.
Because you can't be number one all the time.
No.
I mean, unless you're Kobe or Jordan or something like that, you know, you're at that special, you know, not everyone's going to be you. Eventually you have to accept that you can't be there all the time. You know, that's stressful. It's like the same thing battling. Like, say if you were battling for beatboxing, you practice whatever. You were in your room, whatever, just, right?
The whole time, yeah.
This shit was stressful, dude. It was great, but it was stressful.
Stressful as shit.
Fucking stressful and shit. Yeah. Hell yeah. Like, if you never battled and shit like that, it is fucking stressful. And honestly, as much as I enjoyed at the time, I don't miss it.
Mm.
I don't even actually, you know, like when they asked me to judge for battles, like, hell, that even judging battles is stressful and shit.
Because then this imposter syndrome kicks in, combined with having to judge somebody knowing full well that everyone else is going to get pissed.
You can't, yeah. I was just like, man, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's like, and then it goes back to like, and then that goes back to, again, entitlement. I should be the one. It's like, you know what? And it's like, you're never going to please anyone. It goes back to, as you get older, you just realize you just do the best as you can be as an artist and as a person. That's it.
But Rhett, you know, and I say this with complete and utter admiration, like you, from a DJ point of view, scratch from a battle point of view, 100%, I get it. I suffer the same kind of, I feel you, because I, you know, no one else can do Killer Keller, or I hope not. And in niching yourself in that time and that era, no one else can do it like you do it. So therefore, you are that style. But then what you've also done, in a very Jordan-esque kind of way, is you and the Beat Junkies have taken that base model of your identities and individualities and history, and you've moved into the radio, the schooling, the TV. And this is a real, for me, this is really like a real admirable move.
I mean, we came from the thing is that a lot of our heroes were doing everything, at least from our perspective, you know?
Yeah.
They not only battle, they DJ for rap groups. They did mixtapes.
They
DJ for rap groups. Yeah. They produce.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you're supposed to do?
Just by default, yeah.
by default. And then, of course, when the new, you know, like, because around like 89, 90, everybody thought DJing was played out. Yeah. Everybody thought, you know, like, that's what I think that's where the vacuum of like where the Pickles and the Executioners and us came, because we still, when, like, for us in LA, there was a station called K Day. It was an AM station, 1580 KM, K Day.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's,
yeah,
this is pretty much like, we had the K Day Mixmasters. In some ways, we were based upon the K Day Mixmasters. The K Day Mixmasters was like, at the time, well, it was an all star, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Tony G, who pretty much led it, you know, he probably is like kind of like our father in many ways and stuff. He was a Cuban originally from New York to Miami to LA and stuff. Julio G, Julio G is another West Coast legend. A lot of people might know him from the voice on Los Santos Radio on Grand Theft Audio.
Damn, okay.
That's Julio G on Los Santos Radio, right? Well, but he's a dope. He was a fucking dope DJ. He just recently, like, he went for a good 10 years. He was Cypress Hills.
That's sick.
Tour DJ and stuff like that. So, sick. But like, Joe Cooley, Aladdin, Ralph M from Funk Dubious, Battle Cat, M-Walk, who DJs for Tone Loke. Treyski, rest in peace. Jammin' Gemini. At one point, Dr. Dre. Bobcat, who's part of Uncle Jam's Army and was part of LA Posse, DJed for El Cool J and shit. Produced, you know, like that. So we had you know, and then before that, also Uncle Jam's Army, which is Egyptian Lover.
Yeah. I mean, this is like high pedigree going on here.
Yeah. We grew up on that.
Yeah.
Along with whatever was coming from New York and shit. K-Day was the... Whatever... You got to also remember, it's almost like the same thing with you guys. Whatever, like, West Coast, LA in general, was like obviously 3-4 years back and behind New York. So whatever would trickle in New York, we'd like, oh, that's it. We didn't know. You know, like, when Planet Rock hit, that was a big thing over here. Because you got to understand, we're listening to funk. We're listening to New Wave and funk, right?
Yeah.
And then when people... People got forget too. Popping and locking came from the West Coast.
That's
so
right.
So cats were right.
There you
go. Cats were popping, right? So when breaking, and all this shit that was coming to New York, started coming to LA. We're like, what's this shit?
Mm-hmm.
And they were breaking the Planet Rock. We didn't know about breaks.
Mm-hmm.
We found out about breaks a little bit later on and shit. You know, we were all listening to funk and shit, like funk and new wave,
mm-hmm.
You know, or we would call it electro and shit like that. You know, like
yeah.
So. Whatever we were behind, you know, like, and K Day pretty much was the one that brought, you know, like, honestly, they helped broke a lot of New York artists here. They played, you know, it was a 24/7 station. It was a hip hop station, but they played not only like hip hop, they played freestyle music, they played funk, soul, disco house at different
That's
times.
That's sick.
We were listening to, I mean, it's almost like the same thing of what they're doing with like Kiss. You know, but that's different times and shit. Like I said, the K-Day Mixmasters were our heroes and shit, like, you know, for West Coast and shit. So the Junkies were kind of modeled in many ways after the K-Day Mixmasters.
Got you. Well, now this now opens up my mind. That makes complete enough sense. When you run off those names... K-Day, then this makes logical sense.
All right. So when K-Day went off the air, and then everybody thought the DJ was played out, because then every rap groups now don't need a DJ, they get a DAT player, right?
Yeah.
The DJ just did that. We pretty much went underground because everybody was saying, "You still guys are DJ, and we still like to cut it up and shit like that," you know? So
yeah.
I mean, that's how the Junkies are. Like, some of us, you know, we were from different mobile DJ groups.
Yeah.
When our partners were like stop DJing and shit. We were like, I was
together
still DJing.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's like, yo, you know, I met Jay, met Mello, you know, Curse, you know, like I said, I grew up with Curse, you know, we were just, you know, like-minded cats and shit, still want to cut it up or buy records and, you know, like that. And everybody's like, oh, you know, at one point, everybody used to think, you know, like, you still DJ? That's played out.
But dude, you know what's crazy about these stories is from the, again, from the outside looking in, the way that America came in, like, on a whole nother DJ tip, you guys were like, it was like a WWF, 90s WWF era. Like, they were, you all of you were characters. Then they, and not only were you, it was almost like someone had incubated you guys in, like, some skill set, some skilled room, where all of a sudden, like, you came out, like, I don't know, like,
I mean, you know, there was also videotapes floating around, like okay, Q, like say for Q and Mike, and you know, with the Pickles and stuff. Yeah. We knew about Q as a Filipino American. I always heard about Q. He's Q's in the Bay Area, so Northern California. We're in Southern California.
Close, yeah, yeah.
Told you, Curse is like my Q-bert. So I knew about, you know, but then I would heard Q, but so I would see all her tapes or seen videotapes of Q and stuff like that, right? And yeah. Eventually, you know, I would heard about Mike as well, you know. The Bay Area has, you know, has a big, you know, Filipino community. There's a big, you know, like I told you about mobile DJing scene. Yeah. There's a big Filipino mobile DJing scene. What the difference between, you know, it's almost the same, but the difference between the Southern California Filipino mobile DJ scene versus the Northern California. We grew up to, obviously, again, K-Day, Uncle Jam's Army. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of it was through skills. I wasn't old enough to go to Uncle Jam's Army. They used to throw big concerts at the LA Sports Arena, like big, you know. So honestly, I heard pictures, seen pictures, or like whatever. But I wasn't old enough to go to those parties, right?
Right.
When you go to Northern California, they had the DJs and stuff, but then they had elaborate sound systems and lighting systems, mm-hmm. like to a point where they bat. Like they had when they do parties, you know. Each DJ would bring their own system in each corner and stuff like that. Like,
well, I had Sound Clash style.
Yeah, basically, right? We had Sound Clash, like we had sound systems, but it's not as elaborate as the Northern California. But the thing we have in common is, like, you know, like one person would be good at putting equipment together. One person's good at doing work. One person's good at mixing certain songs. I was the guy that scratched.
Good, like yeah,
right, you know. You know, and then, or you had like, and then okay, one person has one turntable, the other person has another turntable, the other person has a speaker. We all put together, and you know, that was a
like a band, like you were the formation of a band essentially,
right? You know, because we couldn't afford, you know, like, yeah, you know, I couldn't afford, you know, like, so, but that was I would say there's a difference, but yeah, Q. So, going one of when Q, now this is because in terms of Filipinos. As a Filipino American in hip hop, again, going back, that hip hop is a Black Latino culture.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get that straight, guys.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't deny that shit. If you do, you're not really love.
Exactly.
You know, you don't love this culture. You know.
Exactly.
And this that culture is providing for people outside of that the minorities to give us to what we're doing.
That's right.
So anyways, so when Q won the USA DMC championship, that opened up a whole, like, oh shit. The same thing. Mm-hmm. This guy, not Black, not Latino, not even white, Asian, Filipino. That was a big thing too. That's like, you know, I knew about Q and stuff. Mm-hmm. Q and I are like the same age and shit, you know? And when he won the USA and went to the Worlds, and, you know, it came up with a different style and shit like that. That blew everybody's mind because it's that, because you most of the time you watch the battle, you know, you're the New Mix Seminar battles.
Yeah.
Mostly Blacks, maybe, you know, maybe some Mexicans. Maybe you look. I mean, just recently towards the end, you know, you had like people from Europe, you know, like Francisco Zapata from Italy,
Copenhagen, yeah, that's right.
Copenhagen. I mean, you got to cut Mr. Swift, but, you know, he was Black, but, you know, but still, UK. Then eventually Honda from Japan and shit like that.
Yeah, right?
When Q won that battle, as a Filipino, because as Filipinos, we didn't have no Michael Jackson, no Michael Jordans, okay?
Yeah.
Our heroes were basically our parents, and then Dan and Asanto. Daniel Santo is Bruce Lee's right hand man. If you remember Game of Death,
yeah,
the nunchuck scene, that's Daniel Santo. That's
really?
Bruce Lee's right hand man. He taught Bruce how to use nunchucks and the Cali sticks, Filipino sticks, flying sticks. Okay. So if you're watching Enter the Dragon, he's doing those sticks.
Yeah.
Nunchucks, that's all Dan and Sano taught that.
Okay. Pop trivia right? There, people. Come on. There you go.
Right. So that's maybe our, like, and then of course, Bruce Lee, in terms of Asians, Bruce Lee, of course.
Yeah, hands Bruce down. Was,
you know,
yeah.
But as a Filipino, Dan and Sano is probably the closest hero in terms of anything like that. Then outside of that, you know, like, we didn't have no heroes, right? You know, like, I mean, Nasty Ness is like one of the first OGs from Seattle. Like, he's part of Nasty Mix Records, which is Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Yeah, right? For sure.
So right. Yeah. But we didn't have any really heroes that we can relate to. So when Q won, that was like, oh, like, yo, I can do that shit.
Something that is such a given that, you know, it's like, seeing Hendrix play guitar or hearing a middle eight guitar riff or someone doodling away, someone hearing a scratch on a record, you know, no matter what generation of scratch it is.
Right.
It's such a given in our pop culture, in our social culture to have these things. It's just like for anybody, it's second nature. Well, of course that's a guitar being played. Of course that's a guitar riff. Of course that's Eddie Van Halen's, you know, I don't know, whatever tune, you know.
Right.
But the point I'm making is the foundations that have led to making the equipment that DJs have now, it's through the ingenuity and progress of the likes of you, Cuba, and all these, the foundations, the purveyors of, you know, you guys got behind the technology every single time. I remember that Vestax, what was it, 06 Pro or some shit? 05, yo. And it's just like, you guys, you know, the switch that you could go left and right on the crossfader instead of right and left. It was all these different new combinations that you changed the shape of shit, bro. You all changed the shape of shit.
Man, thank you. I mean, I don't like, you know, like before when we were younger, I did this. Now it's like, it's crazy, you know, again, it is an honor, but you can't really ride on the accolades.
No.
I mean, it's just like before, I'm the co-creator of the O5 Pro, whatever, you know, like, you know, but.
You do know that if I didn't say, you know, from the heart, I say that, and a lot of people listening right now, it would just be undeniably time that if you don't know it by now, I need to tell you on the podcast, especially your podcast. It's facts, you know, it's facts. You were there, you'd done the thing, and you, okay, I hear you because you're constantly learning. That's paramount, and technology's gone fucking crazy. But you know, you were part of the organism of DJ culture.
We all are, one way or another. We all are.
That's right.
It goes back to even like, if you want to go take on something, like, again, so for someone, whether you're from the UK or you're from LA, I've learned that to really realize the scope of what, not only hip hop culture, but just in general as human beings, we have to travel from your other different cultures, because you really realize that you're just a speck in this shit.
Yeah.
Just a speck, dude. Like, it's like, you realize, I mean, we all have prides in where we're from and stuff like that, but really you can learn so much just by, you know, like what we take for granted, where we're from versus whatever people, you know, when you go to another country and culture and experience it, you realize it's like, you know, like, if you're closed-minded, you will not understand it. But then if you're put in a situation where it's like, holy shit, it's like, what if you don't have all that stuff? You don't have nothing to go back, and this is what you have right now. It makes you think like, okay, I ain't shit.
I feel you.
And that goes even with hip-hop and stuff. Like, you know, like, again, going back to the beginning of the conversations and stuff, like, yes, hip hop came from the United States. It's an American culture. It's a black Latino American culture. But what's beautiful about this culture extends it to a lot of genres, a lot of ethnic backgrounds, different people, cultures and stuff brought together. If can't even speak the same language, but we can talk about the same record, just showing that, like, we got this. We're like, oh, go. And then, of course, we can say, like, Muro, shouts to Muro. Japan, right? Uh-huh. Can't speak English. Can't speak English. But if you show him a record, you go, oh, dope. You know? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Hip-hop has its own language, its own culture. That's the beauty of hip-hop. And, you know, like, you get to learn and stuff. But the only thing is just that, I don't, like you said, it's different now. I don't know if, you know, it's cool that you have something like this that hopefully someone a younger age or even our age are not really very versed in this get to hear what we're talking about and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's as in any culture, you should know the history of it. Definitely. If you want to be involved with it, you have to know it. That's in anything. You got to learn this stuff. You have to learn it and stuff.
Rucker said this thing once, and I think it was on a Glastonbury documentary that I saw. He said, before idolizing someone, get into some research and find out who your idols idolize.
Oh, that's some that's real spit. Rucker, man, that's my brother.
Rucker's on some levels.
He's always on some levels, always. You know, what's crazy is because Rucker, you know, like a lot of people don't know, Rucker is half black, half Korean.
Really? No.
Listen,
really?
If you listen to Triple Optics, listen to verses. Something Korean world, the Korean world child. Da, 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 da. Just listen to it.
Yeah.
So I mean,
wow.
It's a lot of levels and shit. Anderson .Paak is half black, half Korean.
Really? Oh man.
His wife is Korean.
Hip hop has always been a reflection of real life culture, life. Oh. And yeah, I think people will take these podcasts, I hope they do, as documentation, evident of the fact, you know, there's no record shops, there's no Fat Beats anymore, you know what I mean? Not, you can go online, but it's not, there's no community.
It's interesting what you say that with records and stuff, because now, I mean, it's not going to be like how it was in the 90s and stuff, but people are buying records.
They are buying records, yeah.
They're like, I mean, the cats, they're now old enough. Yeah. They want to have something tangible.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
It's like they didn't get to experience what we got to experience. I mean, they kind of do a little bit to a certain degree, but it's not, you know, because there's not that many record stores or something like that. But, you know, like, look, it's crazy how vinyl is made a comeback.
Yeah, it's made a comeback.
Even cassette tapes as a collector's item. But so,
yeah,
it goes back again. Like, here's a duality. It's like, you know, like the younger cats are now as they're getting older. They're used to say, you know, if you're talking about today's standards, yes, hip hop music in terms of today's standards and what's going on in the radio and TV, whatever, it's a young man's sport. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But if you're talking about on a culture shit, it's a grown man shit.
Yeah, and it reflects what's going on in real life. It reflects what's happening. It's a mirror.
Right. And it goes back to what we're saying. We're becoming our parents.
So we see things in a very rose-tinted kind of way back in the day.
Back in the days, but then they don't realize the reality. It's like, yo, man, you're just as worse as them, right? It's like,
Let's remember and you know what as well? Some of the records that I listened to when I was like 16, 15 years old, I do sometimes go back to them and I think to myself, actually, I always think I was hyping this one a bit too. I thought it really banged up. Maybe, actually, no, this doesn't sound as good as I thought it did. Do you know what I mean? Right. That happens too.
Right. I mean, and it goes back. Also, I guess, like you said, age comes with wisdom, right? So yeah. I'm not going to bash what's out there right now. I mean, I'm not a big fan with a lot of stuff, but there's some stuff that's out there that I was like, ah, that's cool. I'm not mad at that, you know. Like, but I have to remind myself, why am I chasing that shit? I'm not 16. I'm not 18. I'm not 21. I'm not 25. I'm not gonna go up there and, you know, do that shit again, dude. Like, I'm not trying to pop bottles and shit. Because I, you know, and everybody that complains about that shit is that they the irony is you hear people complaining about that shit, but yet they still listen to that shit.
Yes, that's right. That's the bit that does me in, man. Actually, that out of everything is a bit that does me in. You complain that everything sounds the same, yet you still go and get it.
Right. So it goes back to even like, let's talk about the complaining again. So like, so for us, there was at one point there were people complaining about real DJing. There's no, you know, they talk about Serato being, it's like, they forgot that Serato is a tool. It's digital, right? There's not that many, like you said, there's not many record stores, right?
Yeah.
DJing's still a skill.
That's right.
Half the people, you know, like, sure. You have Serato, okay. It goes back to like, dude, I can, you made a point, like we all have the techniques, but it's all our own styles.
Mm-hmm.
I can play the same record, we can have the same records, but we're, or I can beatbox, whatever, but we're going to flip it the way as individuals. That's what makes us stands out. We all have the same tools. It's what you're going to do with that, right?
That's right.
And it's just, it's technology. Yeah, it gets glazing many times and shit like that. But end of the day, it's a skill. And I can, here's the thing, man. People that talk at one point complain about Serato, right?
Yeah.
And then next you know they're DJing on Serato and stuff like that. But here's the funniest thing. It's like, okay, I can go on Serato, but I can go on vinyl. Can you do that? I can do that on CDJs, but can you do what I do? It's the same thing about sampling. They say, oh, sampling is can you do it good? That's a difference.
That's right.
Can you do beatboxing? Now, goes back to DJing and stuff. You used to hear about people like just complaining about, man, this DJ is doing this and this and this and this, whatever, whoop de whoop de whoop. Man, there's no, that's where the idea of the school came about.
Right. You know? Okay.
So, because it goes back to ring now, because we were kind of hesitant at first. And it was D Styles that actually says, you know, we should open up a school. I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man. But when D said it on some, like, look what happened to old world champion boxers when they retired. They opened a gym, right?
And they teach. Oh, that's so sick. Okay.
Right? Not saying that we retired.
I get you.
But, you know, but that's, you know, because we were thinking, when we had our 20-year anniversary, like, who would thought we had a 20-year anniversary and shit like that?
Yeah.
We didn't know, we were still a crew, you know, but we were, you know, but everybody was busy like that. But it's like J-Rock was against of having an anniversary because he says, I don't want to date myself.
Yeah, but, I get it.
You know, I get it too. But it's like, you know, too. It's a big thing.
It's 20, man. It's a biggie.
It's a big thing. So when we did it, we were surprised when we started doing shows and doing tours of it, we were surprised how many people came out, especially in LA, how many people wanted to see us perform still, and the age difference. Like,
that's cold. Really,
that kind of
blowing
our minds. And it got to a point where it's almost like kind of like a second wind. And we kind of realized that we're older now, mature, you know, because 10, when we had our 10-year anniversary, you know, we had a label and all that stuff, but we were still artists. We were still, you know, we were just trying to get shit, you know, mature enough.
Yeah.
Now we're mature enough. That made me realize, you know what? That made us realize, like, we still got something. We'd be fools if we don't, you know, take advantage of this. So we started, you know, putting back merch. Then we eventually started a website, Pool. And then...
Because your brand was always tight as well. That's the other thing.
Right. But then, you know, but this is us now doing the work and really... To match it.
Yeah.
And then when D says, like, you know, the next step was, what can we do? Because we already got the pool. We got this. We got that. So opened up a school. And from there... we started realizing, like, you know what? Instead of complaining about what's going on right now in the DJ scene, let's do something about it.
That's right.
At least put. And then it goes back again to also culture-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it hip-hop is the only cultural genre is that we don't teach our history and we debunked our legends and we make fun of the young kids while you see other music genres or cultures
going crazy. Yeah.
Doing, always giving up to their, you know, knowing the history, giving up to their heroes, the legends, showing culture. So once we got, again, ego, take the ego out.
Yeah.
Once we got over that, that's when things just opened up a lot of things. And, you know, that was another, you know, I was trained jiu-jitsu already. And that was all I would apply it, because now it makes you say, okay, sure, I'm a teacher, but teaching is a whole ball game, man.
Yeah.
Really, it makes you realize, it makes you become a student again. And honestly, because of being a teacher, I actually became a better DJ because I'm able to teach, because I'm able to break it down. Like, out of all of us, Mr. Chalk was the one that has been teaching. He was teaching at the Scratch Academy in LA.
Right.
He was like the LA director and stuff. And so we told him we want to open a school. He's like, you know, like, want to make money for them, or you want to make money for the crew, for yourself?
Yeah.
And so that, and he taught, he was the one that kind of helped us to learn how to teach. We thought teaching was going to be easy. Oh, hell no.
Yeah, no, there's a hold.
Oh, hell no.
But I tell you what, though, it does keep you grounded. I mean, like, your ear is on the ground the whole time when you're listening to. I found when I was teaching, not by any means close to the way you guys are, but I had my season of it, and yeah, they do throw some questions, an honest question that makes you realize, yo, actually, they got a point, you know, and yeah, actually, this, you feel like you're closer to the to a younger generation, don't you?
It's, well, not even that. It's just with our school.
Oh, it's different ages.
Our youngest is like 9, 10 years old. Our oldest is like 52, 53 years old. Our oldest student is a judge.
Get out. Woo.
I'm not kidding.
That's crazy.
Like 60-70% of our students are women.
That's amazing. Of course. Yeah.
No. And it's crazy. Women pick up DJing quicker than guys.
Yeah, I'm all about that. I'm all about celebrating that.
Yeah. So, and it's crazy, because it's like we were able to give them a space, because, you know, women are intimidated. It's a DJing, you know,
testosterone driven man fest. Yeah.
So once we were able to give them that space, man, they took off, man. They're like, man, we got some great students that happen to be women that just, just killing it and shit.
That's
inspiring. Aspiring and shit. It's like, oh shit, I better go practice and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Man,
now,
but yeah,
you.
Man, I mean, it goes back in, it humbles you, makes you realize, man, you know, like, it's, if we want something, you know, if you want it right, or what, or, you know, you don't want to, don't complain, do something about it.
Do something, act up. Do you think, Rhett, man, like, even talking to you now, there's something about hip hop, and I know this is ingrained in like the first things that you get off of as a kid, but even talking about it, when I see a fucking badass breakdance battle in 2021, or, you know, because there's some crazy shit going down, but it pulls out my inner child, man, and I feel like driven again. Do you know when, you know, and it's just, I don't know what it is about hip hop. It just does that to you. You know what I mean?
Because it's raw.
Yeah.
It's the essence of it is raw and authentic. It's nothing but it's expression. It's basically expression of what it is and stuff like that. It's this also the showing the struggle. It's this, again, not only hip hop is, again, is a black American culture art form. It came from struggle. Hip hop takes something that was nothing and made it something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever it can flourish wherever it's at, and it knows how to adapt to it.
Yeah.
That's one thing, the beauty about hip hop and shit. That's, you know, and we have to make, again, and a lot of people are, you know, they base hip hop upon what's shown on media.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to, you know, I always try to separate that shit, you know, like, again, if you're in the music business, you should know about that shit, you know, like,
yeah.
If you want to be a superstar, hey, be a superstar. shit like that, you know, go ahead. But, you know, like, if you gotta, if you're gonna be participating, well, there's rap and there's hip hop, you know.
Yeah, and even the hip celebrated hip hop records, you've got to delve deeper into the history of them and make. I don't know. Without sounding purist, I value, even if like a hip hop kid now or a hip hop guy from back in the day pulled a commercial move, mm-hmm. like he pulled a commercial tune, to know that the DNA of him. He did that by choice, and his DNA is hip hop, and he's deeply rooted. That's a whole, that to me is a whole different proposition, because it's all about the integrity of that artist, right. Isn't it?
Another one else I'll bring up as a good example.
Yeah,
Black Eyed Peas.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
So because
there you go.
I know Will Apple and Taboo, like before they were Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
You know, they were known as At Bang Time. Will.i.am was
Breakers.
Will 1X. They were dancers, right? And then they got signed to when Taboo wasn't part of At Bang Clan. He was dancing, but it was Will, Apple. I think Mookie Mook was the third member for At Bang Clan. And they were signed to Ruthless Records. Eazy-E. Come on now.
What? I didn't know that. That's mad.
Okay. Yes.
Wow.
Will 1, if you type up Will 1X, At Bang Clan, that's Will 1, that's Will I Am.
That's crazy.
Okay. They were signed to Ruthless Records.
Okay.
He was on Eazy-E's labels, right? Will is also he's a badass freestyler. He fucking, not a freestyle dancer, but a freestyle MC. For real, for real. Right? He can, so when they transitioned to Black Eyed Peas, they were still doing, you know, like that. And then eventually, you know, of course, when they became more a Black Eyed Peas and
global,
shit.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say this. I'm not really a fan of some of their work, but I know their DNA. Will,
exactly.
You know, even when there was like the B-Boy Summits was going down, Will would come down and go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time Will killed it on some Supernat had an album release party. In L.A., right?
Okay,
And everyone that was an MC during those times, in L.A., during like everyone from Dilated, Freestyle Fellowship, The Far Eye, Alcoholics, who else was there, right? And I remember I was DJing, because, you know.
That doesn't sound like a basic night by any stretch.
Oh, dude, let me tell you this, dude. Will came up there and stuff like that. I was like, after Supernat performed, you know, he started a freestyle cipher on stage.
Damn, okay.
Will came out there and I was DJing. And I remember this shit too. Everybody was like, didn't want to give the mic to Will. They didn't want to give the mic to Will. Will came in there and he fucking went off. Like, really, like, made everybody like, oh shit. Like, he's like, you know, even though he had the Black Eyed Peas money, fucking Where's the Love money and all that shit, like he had all that shit, but he get there and fucked it up and shit and made everybody like, okay.
Good for him.
Yeah. And
Fuck,
you know,
yeah.
And then, you know, the thing is that he made that respect. I mean, like, and then the last time, and then the next time I seen him, Apple, had a song on his on one of the albums called Bebot. Bebot means in Tagalog, find girls,
gotcha.
Ladies and stuff like that. And he's rapping in Tagalog, which is a dialect, the main dialect for Filipinos, right, in the Philippines and stuff. So,
right.
He got, you know, he asked, you know, Filipino, like, you know, yo, Red, be able to do a cameo in there. I'm, you know, there like that. So,
mm-hmm.
I remember when I saw Will, I was like, hey, man, congratulations, dude, you know. I'm happy for you, dude. And I remember saying this to him, like, hey, dude, get your money, dude. And I like that, but dude, you need to go back to your roots and shit. Don't forget your roots, dude. And I remember telling this dude, I got some shit, dude. I'm doing some shit with Nas and I'm doing some shit with the game.
Oh, that's, and of course.
This is before, and then eventually, you know, he did the, you know, Hip Hop Is Dead, and then whatever production he did for the game.
And the Buster, too. He did that tune.
Yeah. So
that was dope.
So, and then when I, the next time I seen him, I was like, That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, wicked.
Don't forget your roots. Don't forget your roots. Just go get your money. Fucking do all the crazy songs. I'm not a you know, big fan of, but at least I know where your head's at.
Your DNA. So, where the DNA is, isn't it?
And the thing is, Will, a lot of people don't know. Will came from the hood. He grew up in East LA. East LA's were predominantly Mexicans. The only black kid. They used to call him Little Willie. From, you know, like, yo, came from that from the hood and shit like that. So I mean, yeah, man. And so there's a struggle. So when I see friends that came up with making their moves, like when we're young, of course, again.
Yeah.
B-boy shit like that. Now it's like we're older. Yeah. Now it's like, yo, man, you know, keep your DNA, but.
Exactly. What's the future? On that note, what's the future for Repmatic? You got the V album, Visionaries. It's fucking great to see you guys on it. But yo, tell us what's the plans? What's the plan? Before we wrap, what's the plans?
Still, you know, like you know, like in the next 2 hours I gotta go teach online.
Oh, sick.
Be Junkies TV.
Day in the life, man.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, still got, you know, Beat Junkies, you know, whatever our business and platforms and as an artist, you know, like that. Mm. Just, you know, whether it be the school or merch or online websites and the Visionaries, we're building, obviously being really independent, doing it ourselves too, learning stuff. Yeah, pick up that Visionaries album, man, if you have it. Yeah. You know, like regardless if it doesn't make a dent or anything, just for me personally, I'm really proud of the album and how it came out and stuff. For me as a producer, it's one of the gratifying thing that I can say this in terms of like, I see it from front to back and
the vision, you saw it all the way through.
It's like show and prove as to show as a producer and stuff like that, you know. We got some, you know, the vinyl finally, well, hopefully in like April, May, we're going to have vinyl like that. Got some merch and, you know, working, still trying to work on some more music, just expanding. Repmatic as an artist, a producer, you know, like I've been lucky enough to, it's funny now, people are asking me for beats. I can't make beats quick as this.
See what you like started now.
Yeah. So it's funny. It's like, so I'm not like Madlib who makes 30 beats in one day and shit like that. And
yeah.
Man, there's other, you know, I only can, because most of the time, my full time really is like, it's either Junkies, Visionaries on one side, and then I'm a full time caregiver for my mom. So, you know, that's basically what I'm really doing. But I did scratches for the upcoming Eric Bobo from Cypress Hill. Him and Stu Banger's got an album, a producer's album. So I did scratches on that.
Sick. Okay.
I did scratches on Breakbeat Lou's album. About to put out. I've been putting out some producer or beat tapes, whatever, on my Bandcamp page and shit like that. You know, just more work, whatever I can do. Hopefully more like Cypress Junkies, which is Bobo, myself. We do it with DJ Percussion.
Crazy. Yeah. Crazy. That's fucking great.
Yeah. Just, man, just lucky just to be grateful to still do what I love to do. Kind of getting paid, you know. End of the day, this is therapeutic for me. This is like you, like breathing water. This is like, I can't see myself. I don't know what would I be doing without hip hop, really. So,
what a way to end. That is so fucking, it's poetic. Fucking the way, and I'm exactly the same, bro. Yeah.
I'm exactly the same. Regardless of what level we're at in our careers, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, we're talking, like here.
Yeah.
This is hip hop.
This is hip hop.
We're talking. Someone across the pond, different time zone.
Doesn't it make you proud? Doesn't it make proud of us? What the fucking cool is that?
And just to have friends, like I have friends that feel the same way about hip hop.
Yeah.
Other parts of the country.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, like hey, man, I got to say also, like, rest in peace to Ty, you know.
Yeah, rest in peace to Ty, man.
Man, that's a good brother. I had a really good chance two years ago to tour with him, with me and Bobo, Cypress Junkies, and Ty. And we found out we had a great chemistry to perform together and stuff. So
he's the best. He was the best. He's in his legacy.
Man, that's very real good-hearted brother. Yeah. Very intense brother, but at the same time, good-hearted when you get him on like that. But just really get to know him. You get to really know someone when you really go tour and you have to share, like, being Airbnbs, or, you know, you have to go through the trenches and shit like that. And the music he played, man, you know, his last album was really dope.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, so. Didn't take fools kindly. He called it, and no one moment was he wrong.
No, man, he was. That's what I had, respect him. He was, his convictions of what he believes in.
Yeah,
his values and stuff like that. That's, and even for community wise, in terms of trying, even as a black man in the UK, and him trying, you know, like, to even for his own community within the UK, whether it be black or the hip hop community and stuff like that, what he championed and stuff like that. So, and I learned a lot also from that. You know, I mean, I know there's different, like, in any areas and stuff, UK have their own sections of hip hop heroes and whatever, whatnot. I mean, some of you guys obviously connected, but it's like, there was also, like, you know, there's
totally, there's boroughs, generational gaps, and, you know, some people are only into UK hip-hop, other people are into all sorts of hip-hop. Then there's the rap. Then you're right. He was a bridge maker, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
No. So, respect to you, respect to Harry Love, respect to Prime Cuts, respect to Mr. Thing, respect to Shorty Blitz. I'm sure I'm missing a lot of people, but the people I mentioned are the ones... Like yourself, like the ones I really, you know, like, I know personally and shit like that. You know, the ones I mentioned are like who I've been really, like, personally lucky to know, like you and stuff like that. So it's an honor for you to ask me to be on your podcast and shit. So I'm sure it's someone in UK. Who the bloody shit is Rhetmatic?
Nah, okay. Afraid not, mate. You know, you've spoken exactly. Exactly what your audience come to expect from you, brother. And I think my audience massively reflects yours. It's all one and the same heart, and it moves ever flowing. And I'm just humbled that you've come on and you spoke like a visionary. look up, come on. You know, that's the commercial trailer right there.
There you go.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us, my man. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Rhetmatic's podcast. And we are Out Like Him Was Out of Fashion. Sharing is caring. Don't forget, spread the word. We are Out Like Him Was Out of Fashion. You stay lucky, people. Say goodbye, Rhett.
Salute, salutations, and I'm out.
Peace.